Welcome to After Hours, conversations for music educators, presented by AMRO Music. This is where we share ideas and work towards solutions to better serve your students. This week, Nick Averwater continues his conversation with Glenn Schneider, an instructor at Vandercook College of Music in Chicago and creator of MusicMastery.band, a personalized online teaching resource designed for students for whom private lessons are not an option. Glenn has over 20 years of experience as a band director, and in the last episode, we learned all about MusicMastery.band. But this week, we're going to learn much more about his personal philosophies and techniques for promoting individual musicianship in an ensemble setting. He'll also tell us more about some of the ways Vandercook College supports the music education community. Our conversation was recorded in January of 2023. It's broken up into two episodes, and this is part two.
Now, Glenn, I'd love to transition a little bit and talk about something of a parallel topic, because I get the impression that you're really passionate about, you know, individual musicianship. Hence, you've created this website, musicmastery.band, but you had 20 years of teaching before this website came out, where you were incorporating individual musicianships into your various ensembles and really working individually with your students. I'd love to hear your strategy as an educator in elevating individual musicianship and how you approach that from an educator's perspective.
Yeah, I love this topic. I could talk all day about individual musicianship in the ensemble, because it's the kind of thing that either you love to do or you really purposefully stay away from it in rehearsal as a director. I've heard countless directors say that they don't want to embarrass their students in ensemble rehearsal because when they stop and they ask individuals to play, it's embarrassing for that kid. They're worried about the kids, you know, laughing at each other or having some sort of environment where the individuals feel scrutinized. And, you know, I get that. That's, we never want to have kids feel like they should be embarrassed with how they sound or how they perform. But there is a level of comfort that comes when you do it right. There's a level of comfort that comes when an entire band enjoys hearing the individual sounds that are coming from all the members. There's a level of trust that you tend to gain as the director when you can say, I want to hear all the saxophones play measure 13, and I'm going to give a little bit of instruction to every kid when I hear all those different performances. And the result is that our saxophones are going to sound awesome in measure 13. There's a level of trust that your whole ensemble says, wow, you know, Mr. Schneider, when he stops and he hears everyone in a section play something and refines all that material, our band gets so much better. And so at some point, when you're in your journey of hearing and working with students individually in an ensemble, at some point, the students realize that the gain is musicianship. That it's not just perfection. I don't want to hear you play this individually so that I can hear you do it perfectly. We're going to all learn something from all the musicians in the group. Now, I learned this from many different people, but the real onset of this idea came from Bob Duke's book, Intelligent Musicianship. It's a great book. He's got lots of material out there about it, but the Intelligent Musicianship book is essentially a set of core essays that are written about how to teach individuals and how to teach ensembles and how to really break things down and why musicians do what they do. And it's a lot of psychology, I would say. But when I started studying this, my mind just kind of was blown at how easy it is to glaze over individual musicianship in an ensemble. And so the more intentional I became about breaking down sections and then breaking sections down into individuals and learning how to do it in a fun and engaging and kind of an inspiring way, that was always the challenge. Is if you stop a band from playing, you better have a really good reason for why you're stopping, right? And so if you can go into a rehearsal and say that I'm going to make the entire ensemble better, I'm going to make every section better, and I'm going to make all the individuals better, I'm telling you, it's a game changer as a band director to give yourself that freedom and say, I don't have to be afraid of singling players out, because every time we do that, we get better. And so there's lots of tricks and lots of, I would call, strategies, classroom management tactics on how to do it. But I think it's a matter of watching great directors, great conductors, and watching them work with individuals and then saying, I'm going to do that intentionally, because every time we do that, we get better. So I've written some articles on the concept. I've read a lot about it, and I would say if you watch me teach, there's always like a balance between let's all play and then let's hear you play as an individual, and then let's hear just the five of you play, and then let's hear all six of you in a row play, and then let's hear all six of you play that together now. And there's always this really just great opportunity for instruction, no matter if it's 50, 100, or just one. I'm always interested in improving. So the individual concept is all about improvement. And again, going back to music mastery, that's what I want. I want to see students improve and understand how to break things down so that they can be proud of themselves. Bring it back to the retention piece, but I want to see students continue in band. That's the goal.
Well, and I want to unpack a little something with you, and perhaps it's one of my misconceptions, because when I hear that phrase, individual musicianship in the ensemble, I am envisioning, and perhaps others do too, more things for an educator to do, right? When I hear individual musicianship, I think institute a lesson program or teach after school lessons, and I think for a lot of educators, that's overwhelming, because it's like, gosh, I have so much on my plate. Now to go to an individual musicianship level, I have to do individual things with individual people. But what you're saying is this is more of a teaching style. It is a teaching strategy while you're in the classroom, while you're with your entire ensemble. And I would love to hear more about those strategies.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you an example. How do you start a rehearsal? Does everyone play a tuning note? No. The oboe plays a tuning note, right? Or the principal clarinet plays a tuning note. We have this tradition of saying, let's start an orchestra rehearsal, and the principal oboe plays an A, and the orchestra gets quiet and listens and then matches to that one person, right? And so why don't we start rehearsals like that? Why don't we ask, hey, who has a great B flat that we could start with today? Who's got a perfect B flat? How about mezzo forte whole note, right? And if you look at 45 kids in a room and you ask, who's got a great B flat? A couple of kids are going to raise their hand. And if you wait for 3 seconds, someone's going to raise their hand. I'll do it. And so you start with this concept of I've got a good B flat. Yeah, sure. Okay, let's hear it. So that student plays a B flat for the band. Now you could say, now everyone, let's play your B flat. Let's sound just like Henry or whatever, right? And so if that B flat is not the greatest B flat though, you now have an opportunity to say, hey, are you pushed in all the way there? Or hey, can you try one thing? That was a great B flat, but can you just take a little bigger breath this time? Just support it a little more. Do it one more time. Oh yeah, there it is. There's the B flat. Okay, now everyone play. You just took 5 seconds to remind the entire ensemble to take a big breath, right? But you did it on an individual level, and the ensemble could hear version A was pretty darn good. Version B was better because we took a bigger breath. And in a band setting, if you say, everyone take a big breath and play a B flat, first of all, there's no comparison model there. Secondly, even if you did play a B flat with the whole band and then said, yep, you guys need to take a bigger breath, and you played the note again, chances are most of your students, because they're students, are not going to hear the difference. Or they're going to kind of make fun of the fact that I didn't hear a difference. Why do we have to do that again? They get frustrated. They don't really hear the difference. But when you break it down to an individual level, they can hear the difference. Anyone can. Right. And so Bob Duke, going back to his writings, this is called discriminatory listening. where you can say, I heard the difference between A and B, and here's why. I can tell you what the differences were. And then down the road, students can start saying, I didn't like how I played that. I'm going to play that different by doing this and this and this. And so your students start to actually start developing a toolkit of pedagogical skills that you used to have to do, that you used to have to provide them. Now they're starting to think them up, because when you teach on an individual level, they're all analyzing along with you. And so to your point, sounds like a lot of work, right? Oh man, individual musicianship is so much time and effort and takes so much out of the rehearsal. Well, really, it doesn't. It actually buys you time. It actually gives you proactive reasons to teach more in depth. And so teachers that say, I don't have enough time, I don't have, you know, I don't have the best players, you're probably doing too much section and ensemble rehearsal. You probably need to actually hone it back to more individuals and say, what is the quality that we want here in this section? Let's all try to do that now. So it's all about comparison. Again, the term that I love is discriminatory listening by Bob Duke. It's just the best way to really understand it.
Yeah. I mean, this is a really great topic, because it's this, I mean, this is such an educational nuance, right, that I think is so easy to overlook. But when you get it right, the impact can be exponential. And so, I mean, this is just such a nuanced thing, but you can see, I mean, this is something that you're really passionate and you've given a lot of time to. Now, I know in your role that you mentor young educators, just like Charlie and Dr. Tim mentored you. You interact with a lot of young educators. You know, how can we get this perhaps discriminatory listening or perhaps another concept that is taught here wrong? I mean, what are our pitfalls and what are some of the most frequent mistakes we can get when we're really trying to focus on this individual musicianship in the ensemble?
Yeah, it's a really great question. I think a pitfall that someone who's trying these tactics out that's possible to fall into is the idea that if I do this, then my band automatically sounds better, right? So the piece that you might be missing in that instance would be the reflection piece. Did they actually sound better? So this might be a reason why you'd want to record your rehearsals. So I did X strategy. The students did the activity. I confirmed that we did it, and I said we did better, or I said that was you know, a much better performance. Great job. You know, band directors throw out that card, great job, way too often, by the way. They qualify the performance way too early. But either way, can you stand back as a teacher and say, did it actually get better, right? And so reflection is really important. Reflection is key. One of the things that I do with the Vandercook master's students that I come in contact with through the classes I teach is I expect a high level of reflection. I don't need a whole lot of sophistication for the classes that I teach. It's all about reflection. So like, here's an idea or a strategy to try this week in your ensemble. I don't need 50 examples of you doing it. I need one reflection of you piecing all those 50 times together and saying, is it actually working, right? So this is like in life in general. You read a self-help book because someone told you that this is the solution to your problem, and we're back to the same habit or we're back to the same issue 3 months later. Band directing is the same thing. You can't just take someone's strategy, try it, and say, there, now we're good. You have to really work it. You have to really analyze it. You have to write your ideas down. And I think sometimes the piece that's missing the most is literally asking your students, was that better? What, did we actually play better? Sometimes your students are more honest than you would be with yourself. And they say, I didn't hear a difference. And you say, yeah, sure we did. No, there really wasn't a difference, right? So how do we sell that to our students of saying, like, this is really good for us? Well, you have to actually sound better after you implore a strategy. And so, you know, the classes that people take in their master's degree level at Vandercook, it's all about reflection. It's all about what did you learn? How did you use it? And then what do you know now that you can use in the future? So teachers just need time to reflect. Teachers need time with other teachers. Teachers need time with mentors. Teachers need time with the recordings of their rehearsals. They need to be in a habit of constantly analyzing what's going on. So whether that be with a faculty meeting once a week, or even just a coworker, you and a coworker have an understanding that once a month you're going to watch each other conduct a rehearsal and provide some notes for each other. This is the way that you finally figure out if what you're doing is making an impact. So high level reflection for teachers, I think, is a big thing.
Well, Glenn, what's interesting to me across all of these topics that we've discussed is the intentionality of some sort of feedback mechanism, right? Whether it's feedback mechanism for the individual student, for the section, which, you know, flows up to the ensemble, but also for the conductor, for the instructor, the intentionality of that feedback mechanism, building upon that feedback to elevate to that next level. It's not accidental, and it's not going to happen unless you make it intentional.
That's right. And if you watch the best conductors, they're just great at feedback. That's exactly right. I mean, they stop the orchestra or the band, and what they say next is feedback to move the rehearsal forward, or to maybe come back and do something again that's going to that's going to result in something. And so as music teachers, we have to provide great feedback. And, you know, there's a tendency to get, you know, overly funny in a rehearsal, or overly analytic, or just overly technical sometimes. But are we providing great feedback, and are we providing inspirational feedback? Are we providing written feedback? Are we providing visual feedback? Sometimes that just comes with a smile on your face to say, that was really the best we ever did. That was amazing. Giving kids a compliment. You know, that's why I often will say that band directors are way too complimentary. If you waste your compliment card, you can't give it out, right? You just complimented on them on a B minus. Why would you ever do that? You know, wait, be patient in complimenting your band, because when you give it out, it really means something. When you hand out a compliment to a band individually or to the ensemble, it better be for a good reason. And I think young band directors, they say the words good job way too often. And the students get very quickly this idea that we can just be okay and be told good job any day of the year. And the concert really wasn't that great, but our band director is still going to say great job, even though it really wasn't the greatest concert. So like, when do you actually tell them good job? When do you really know that it's time to say that was our best? It's the feedback. Don't give, you know, generalized feedback to students. They don't want that. They want specific, qualified feedback. Don't say good job. Say trombones. I have never heard you play like that. That was amazing. You want to know why? Because XYZ. Give them specific feedback, because at that point, the whole ensemble can say, I want that. I want the clarinets to have that. And then they'll try harder for you the next rep, because everyone's interested in getting that feedback. And so you can turn your generalized good job feedback, compliments, I'll call them, into you're actually listening to the ensemble every minute, trying to figure out what's going on. That's really bad. That's really great. That's just okay. I need to work on that. And so you stop and you give all that feedback at once. Hey, clarinets, that was unbelievable. Nice job. Now, trombones, that wasn't so great. Let's get into that. Now, clarinets, can you play that for us one more time? Because that was so awesome. I just want everyone to hear that. And so back to the discriminatory listening. Like, does everyone have a chance to see and hear why you're giving a compliment? So feedback is actually key. If you go into that intelligent music teaching book by Robert Duke, there's an entire chapter on feedback, which is kind of funny that you're bringing that up, Nick.
Yeah, love that. Well, I can tell that that book has been so influential in your teaching style. But again, I love the things that you're sharing because these are such nuanced conversations. And you know what's interesting, when you're either watching a rehearsal or a performer in you're in one of these rehearsals. I mean, it's like a well balanced cocktail. I mean, everything just fits together so nicely, and the information is flowing so effortlessly. You're having fun. And it's hard to identify why, but everything is just in place. I mean, I remember watching Dr. Tim Oliver, who's the director of bands at Arkansas State, and he was rehearsing his band, and they were having so much fun, but I thought the feedback is so good and so intentional, and they're having so much fun doing it that I wanted to go get my horn and be like, I want to play in this group. I want to be in this band right now because of what Dr. Oliver was offering on the podium. And so, but it's so nuanced. Things can get out of balance so quickly if we're not careful.
Yeah, that's always the balance of how long do I tell a story or how long do I work this particular section until we're actually not making progress anymore. But yeah, the seasoned band directors, I mean, if you've been teaching for, you know, at least more than five, but likely more than 10 or 15, you get to a point where you're saying the nuance. I would agree that you start to have a very natural sense of timing and humor and technique and run-throughs and story time, and you just know how to balance your time. Like, I have 50 minutes, so you know I might need to break that time down as a young teacher and really be thoughtful about, I need 5 minutes of this and 10 minutes of this. But if you walked into a rehearsal now with me, you would see me doing some of that very naturally. I wouldn't probably have to write down almost anything about my timing. And yet, what's kind of funny about talking about this is I've gone very much back and forth as a band director over the years of I'm going to be very scripted and very timely with my activities. And then once I get a little better at that, I tend to go away from that and start to wing it more. And then after I start winging it more, I tend to start saying, oh gosh, why are my rehearsals not going so well right now? Because you stopped being disciplined, right? And so there's always that push and pull. And I think I don't know that the younger, especially our students, but even the younger directors know how much score study and prep is required even for a seasoned 30 or 40 year teacher. I don't think that they realize how much time they actually spend being thoughtful about those things. They don't just get up there and wing it. They have prepped that score. They know exactly what to go after. They know all the problem spots. They know all the instrument tendencies. They know all the alternate fingerings. They really do, you know, and they make it look so darn easy though. And yet there's so much technique and prep behind that rehearsal that looks fun and engaging. So I would say to the younger teachers out there, if you're looking to have a more engaging and fun and productive and technical rehearsal that provides everything that you had as a player, it would be that you prep more for your rehearsals, that you would really think about the time that you're going to spend doing things and what really is the goal and what's the overall trajectory of your concert cycle. Like, are you running through a piece the week before the concert? I would hope so. You know, are you running through a piece the first, you know, week that you handed it out? I would hope not. Maybe once, but after that, I would hope it's like, you know, let's analyze this sucker. So I think it's a good point, and I think conductors just need to know how to be balanced and also how to be patient and learn from each other.
Yeah. Great thoughts, Glenn. Well, Glenn, it's hard to imagine that our time has moved so quickly. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I want to just throw out one more really brief topic with you, and that's Vandercook. You know, I have had the privilege of visiting the campus, you know, had some meetings there for the Music Achievement Council, but I have probably underappreciated or misunderstood, I guess, all of the different offerings that Vandercook has, not just for its current undergrad or master's students, but for the music education community as a whole. And I would love to hear you just share with our listeners some of the awesome things that Vandercook does that might be interesting to everybody.
Yeah, Thanks for allowing me to unpack that a little bit. I have a lot of passion for Vandercook College. You know, I graduated with my master's degree in music education from Vandercook back in 2006. Loved the place. It made me such a better teacher. And I've never stopped singing the praise of the educational value that Vandercook College has. Not only that, but the historical piece that they have played for decades in music education. If you go back and look at who graduated from Vandercook and who's taught at Vandercook, it's just unbelievable. And what they really stand on is great instruction that leads to passionate music education. It really is. Like the early on teachers at Vandercook were very pedagogically sound for their time. And so as they started these instruction modules, we'll call them, you know, back in the day, and basically a band director training school, it became the kind of the guide of how to do band instruction. So over the years, they've just slowly expanded all their reach to music education. Originally it was an instrument, you know, band director school, but look at it now, ORF, strings, choral, general music. I mean, the things that you can find on their website, it's all encompassing. And so I would say to anyone that hasn't really checked out Vandercook, check it out because it's a huge resource. So you can do your undergrad, you can do your master's studies there, of course. You can get a teacher's certificate through a master's program called the MCert program. The place where I fit in over there is I teach for the MECA program, which is essentially our professional development elective piece of the graduate program. So you either can use the MECA courses towards your master's degree, or you can come at any time in your career and you can take a MECA class to, up your game. Maybe you need grad credits to keep your license or move over on the salary lane in your teacher contract, whatever have you. It's a place to get resources and take classes. And I think it's amazing the variety of classes you can take and the thought that goes into the variety. The instructors they're bringing in from a national and even international level is just really amazing. And if you look back on the years that they've been doing this MECA program, I think truly the gem is the consistency that they have had. You know, they don't have up and down years at Vandercook in terms of their offerings. It's always this incredible offering to the music education community. The three classes that I'm teaching this summer, for instance, I'm trying to give band directors something technical, something historical, and something that's more analytical. So I'm teaching three classes this summer. One is called the Complete Guide to Band Warmups, where we highlight the work of some current band directors in the field. Most of them have brought their bands to the Midwest Clinic over the years, and they're just basically sharing week by week their warm-up strategies for that beginning of rehearsal that we know is so important. And then the other class that I'm teaching is called the Directed Listening Model. This is based on a text by John Pasquale, who's the director of the University of Michigan Marching Band, David Klemmer and Chris Breitach, who's actually a music educator in Germany. They've co-authored a book called The Directed Listening Model. And it's really an analysis of how to teach band using visual aids and lots of structures and procedures on how to really teach components of wind playing and then really boil it down to artistry and musicianship. It's a wonderful book. We have a class for 8 weeks that breaks out that book. And then the final class that I'm really excited about is a class called Bands of Historical Significance. And we're going basically in chronological order, highlighting some of the most historical bands that have existed. So we've got early wind bands. We've got the Marine Band and the Sousa Band, the Goldman Band, Japanese bands. We've got all these different topics. And every week we'll have a different lecturer that will present on that topic. So for instance, we're going to have Barry Hauser from the University of Illinois doing a presentation on the Big Ten bands. We're going to have Michael Colburn, who used to be the conductor of the Marine Band. he's going to do the session on the Marine Band. We're going to have Loris Schissel, who everyone knows with the Goldman Band. He's going to do a sequence on the Goldman Band as well as the Sousa Band. So lots of big names, lots of really great inspirational stories I'm sure will be shared. But all in all, I mean, my courses are only just 1% of the other instructional greatness going on at Vandercook. So I hope, you know, if you haven't heard about Vandercook, that you'll check us out. And if you're a band director, I hope to see you in one of my courses coming up, because I think they're of great value.
Well, Glenn, I have enjoyed this conversation so much. I've really enjoyed getting to dive into musicmastery.band. What an awesome resource for educators. I've enjoyed talking so much about Vandercook, this wonderful institution that offers so much more than just an undergrad or graduate degree. Of course, an incredible program that you graduated from for your master's, but so much more than that, what they're giving to music education. And then just your teaching philosophy, some way that you approach the podium, approach your students, approach the classroom. Man, your energy, your enthusiasm, your love for music is just contagious. So thank you. Now, for our listeners, Glenn, I would, you know, how can they follow what you're doing? Maybe they have questions about musicmastery.band. They have a question about Vandercook. How can they get in touch with you?
Well, I'm fairly easy to find. At Vandercook, you just email me at gschneider@vandercook.edu. You can find my classes over at the Mecca page. Musicmastery.band, that is the website URL. And you can email us at info@musicmastery.band. There's also a Facebook page you can follow. There's a YouTube channel you can follow as well. Would love to talk to you if you're a band director interested in having your students join on in Music Mastery. Would love to talk to you about that. I would also love to talk to you about a director course that we're also offering on Music Mastery that essentially is kind of designed to be a music mastermind for band directors, where we're going to have interactions monthly and great guest speakers as part of the class. Very little charge to the band directors. Of course, we'd rather just see you bring your students to us and get a lot out of that director track. So there's a page on the website to see more information about that. And if you'd like information on the director track, you can email us there as well. But yeah, we just hope to answer your questions and have a dialogue about how this tool can be of use to your students. And most importantly, if your students join on and you're having success, please share that with us, because we'd love to know how we're doing and what we can do better.
That's Glenn Schneider, creator of the online teaching resource musicmastery.band, talking with Nick Averwater on After Hours, Conversations for Music Educators, which is presented by Amro Music. This podcast is produced by Nick Averwater and Joel Hurd in Memphis, Tennessee, and you can hear many more conversations at amromusic.com/afterhours.
Hey, if you enjoyed today's episode, here are two easy and fast ways you can support the After Hours show. First, your 5-star review means a lot, as it helps to boost us in the podcast rankings so that other music educators just like you can find us. Second, if you thought of someone that would enjoy this week's content and episode, hey, please share it with them so that they too can be a part of the After Hours community. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next week.